Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. Right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Brandon Cronenberg's Infinity Pool, which I loved and I'm so excited to talk about. We talked about his film Possessor a couple of years ago here on the show with film critic and awesome movier host Josh Bell. And Josh is back with us to talk Infinity Pool now. So, we got a great conversation coming up. And as always, I want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. I also want to mention, if you haven't heard the news yet, we have a live show coming up Thursday, February 23rd, here in Las Vegas at Maya Cinemas. We're going to be talking about Cocaine Bear after a screening of the movie. It's going to be a really fun time. I'm really excited for it. We've got Jason Harris, also from Awesome Movie Year, and also Luella Chavez and Michael Keane joining us for the show. It's going to be a great time. I'm so excited about that movie. And yeah, check the show notes. There's links on information on how to get tickets, and we're going to be doing some giveaways soon so you can win tickets as well. So yeah, that's coming up February 23rd. So let's talk about Infinity Pool. All right, Josh Bell is back with us to talk Infinity Pool. We're getting back to Brandon Cronenberg after doing Possessor a couple of years ago. Josh, how's it going?
It's going well. My clone has been filling in for me on other podcasts, so I'm well rested.
Yeah, that clone is it's really lost itself. It's lost the thread a little bit. It's
we might have to put it down.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm so excited to talk about this movie. I know you liked it. Obviously, we've kind of joked already, you know, off mic that I just absolutely love this movie. I wanted to say, like, first and foremost, I think part of the reason maybe that it worked so well for me is I didn't know anything about it. Like, obviously, I knew Brandon Cronenberg had a new film. I liked his previous two films. I really like Mia Goth. I really like Alexander Skarsgård. I didn't see a trailer. I did not know there was going to be clones. I did not know what was... I had heard some, you know, comparisons to the recent, and maybe this will come up in our puzzle pieces, the recent Eat the Rich and, you know, the 1%, all that kind of stuff. So I that's literally all I knew about the movie. And so as it was unfolding, I'm like, oh, wow, this is great.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely knew more, and I'm not one of these people who tries to remain unspoiled for stuff necessarily. Not that I was seeking out every detail, but I think I did see the trailer and had read a bit about what it was about. So I knew what was coming there with the clone, not with everything that happened in the movie, but with that sort of basic premise that it does take a little while to get to. And if you don't know that it's coming, you might not realize that it's going in this sort of sci-fi-ish direction. Although if you've seen other Brandon Cronenberg movies, you might guess that something like that is going to happen.
Yeah. Everything's not going to be as it seems, as it would be in one of these kinds of sci-fi movies. But I'm very excited to talk about it. We'll get into some of what goes on. Obviously, this will be a very spoiler-heavy episode here in getting to talk about some of what goes down on this island at this resort in Infinity Pool. But let's start getting into some puzzle pieces here. What do you have for your first piece?
Well, I feel like I did this with Possessor, and I might as well just keep doing it and start with a David Cronenberg movie. I don't. On the one hand, I don't know if Brandon Cronenberg appreciates this, but he's very much inviting comparisons to his dad with all of his films.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think he'll mind. So the David Cronenberg movie that I thought of most for this one is Crash, which we covered on Awesome Movie Year, and is another movie about a couple who are sort of exploring the edges of strange activities, sexual potentially, and get drawn into this weird underworld. In that case, it is the car crash fetish world, and there's an alluring figure. That's the Elias Koteas character there who kind of seduces them. So I think there's a lot of parallels. Of course, here in Infinity Pool, Cleopatra Coleman's character, eventually, she's not having it, right?
She's out.
Unlike in Crash, where both of them, James Spader and Deborah Kara Unger, they're both like drawn into this weird subculture on maybe not quite equal levels, but definitely both getting into it. But I think that's the idea of like, you have so much and you've done so much that you have to go to further and further extremes of like sensation seeking in order to feel anything. And the characters in Crash are not, I mean, they're not poor, but they're not like ultra wealthy the way the characters here are. But they're definitely people who are comfortable and who are sort of bored with the normal course of life and need to shock their systems more and more. And there's certainly that combination of sexuality and violence and where does one end and one begin in that movie as well.
Yeah. And I, you know, like we talked about on Awesome Movie or when we did cover Crash, I still haven't gotten a chance to rewatch it since like way back, 20 years ago or something like that, because it's very difficult to find. I couldn't find it when we did the episode, and I'm hoping to get to rewatch it sometime soon. But to that point though, like that's some of the stuff that I really liked about this movie is it's something that like a lot of people, they're going on social media and like, this movie's so crazy, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think it's really that crazy. It's not, it's just that it's a subject matter that we don't really explore, at least not in this way ever. And I think it's so interesting. It's more of an idea movie. I know, you know, it's a little bit light on plot, and I'm sure that'll come up as we're going through these puzzle pieces. But like, I think it's exploring these kinds of ideas and these people who, you know, they need to feel something new, something to keep them alive and to get them like excited again. And so Crash seems like a really great puzzle piece from the little I remember of the movie. And of course, from our conversation on Awesome Movie Year of like people that are also in that kind of situation.
Right. I think there has, since we did that episode, been like a nice new Blu-ray or 4K release of Crash, I want to say.
I'm going to have to get that.
Yeah. But it was, I think at the time when we did the episode, I had watched it on a porn site, possibly. So yes, it was definitely a little difficult to track down at that time. But I think now there's a better way to watch it.
Sure, absolutely. I will go with my puzzle piece list is all over the place here. I'm going to get this one out of the way, which is probably too new to actually be a puzzle piece. I actually did hear an interview where Brandon Cronenberg said he had been starting this movie actually right after Antiviral and didn't get a chance to make it because that movie wasn't exactly like a huge hit or anything. So this wouldn't have been an influence, but I do think that it was surprising, like I said, going into this not knowing anything, to find that we got another movie within a year of this sci-fi world that's kind of not really super well explained, where there are clones and the clones get killed. I thought of Riley Stern's Duel, which came out last year, which is also just like this really interesting idea where this girl ends up in a situation where she has to kill her own clone. And it doesn't necessarily take you too deep into the sci-fi of it and the mechanics of it and, you know, how does all this work and why did the world go in this direction? It's just you're dropped in and here's this kind of interesting story using that as the setup. And it's a really interesting setup. And rather than using it for any kind of like action sci-fi spectacle or anything, it's building these kinds of moral questions, and all of the weirdness that comes out of that is what both of these movies I think had on their mind.
Yeah, I had that on my list too, and I really like that movie a lot. I think when we did our half year top 10 for 2022. That was on my top 10 list. And yeah. I like this movie, definitely. I think I liked Duel more. I really enjoy kind of Riley Stern's whole thing. And I thought that movie was very fun. But yeah, and I think you also maybe retweeted, I saw on Twitter that Riley Stern's, he was tweeting about this movie.
Yeah.
Having seen
Infinity
it.
Duel, he said. Yes. More like Infinity Duel.
Right, yeah. Right.
So he clearly saw that connection too. So yeah, so that's fun.
Yes.
But yeah, I really like Duel as well. It's a great movie. And I'm always looking forward to Riley Stern's new stuff. So hopefully something's coming next year or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, what do you got for your next piece?
So my next piece is a movie that I saw again fairly recently after having not watched since it came out. I did a podcast guest appearance about this film. It is Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. And I think one of the key things here, which is also a key theme in Eyes Wide Shut, is the difference between the rich and the incredibly rich. And idea that there is actually this really stratified, you know, difference where we've got Alexander Skarsgård in this film, who is he seems at first like maybe he's a successful author, and then we learn that maybe he's actually not a successful author. But
yeah,
he's comfortable, he's married rich, you know, he's married into this publishing family, and he's comfortable, he's doing fine, but he's clearly not quite in that world, even after having been married to his wife for 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's a similar theme that we've got in Eyes Wide Shut, where you've got Tom Cruise's character, who is this very successful doctor, and he makes a lot of money as a doctor, and his clients are all these ultra wealthy people, but he's sort of like the wealthy servant of the ultra wealthy, you know?
Sure.
And, yeah. And so I think in both cases, it's these characters who think that they're being accepted by this sort of upper echelon, and they're going along with all sorts of weird stuff, whether it's, you know, Tom Cruise going to the crazy masked orgy and thinking he knows the password, and everyone's like, no, we knew the second you arrived that you weren't supposed to be here. And, you know, you have that here too, where Alexander Skarsgård is like, oh yeah, I'm one of you now, because I too had my clone murdered for a crime. And we learn later on, like, no, they're just fucking with him. They look down on him. He's not one of them, and he's not going to be one of them. So I think that's it's a weird distinction if you're not anywhere near one of those levels to realize that there are multiple levels in the 1% of the 1%, but it's there.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that self-loathing of a character like that, that like recognizes that he's not really one of them, but is like just kind of along for the ride, like that is, it's almost like being sick to allow like a worse infection in. Like, it's just like he's so internally beaten down that he's going to allow these people to just turn him into this monster and like just like lose his soul completely in this story. So it was also making me think of like the Epstein type stuff, and like you think to yourself, like, how do these people end up in, you know, those worlds of, you know, all those allegations? And it's like, maybe this is, you know, a very sci-fi version of like the first step to somebody working their way into that disgusting world, you know? But yeah, it's like definitely a character that you don't really see. And I just love the way it's put together in this sci-fi way. Yeah, great puzzle piece there. And I will take your Eyes Wide Shut and go A Clockwork Orange for my next one. As long as we're talking Kubrick, we might as well. Mia Goth and her little traveling band of misfits wearing masks and causing chaos and intimidating and belittling and breaking into homes and doing all kinds of violence and all kinds of unspeakable shit. Seems like a pretty clear influence, I think.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one in a while, but that certainly makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, Anthony Burgess is an author, right, who wrote A Clockwork Orange, had a lot of that like satirical sci-fi stuff, I think, in his work as well.
Yeah.
Although I haven't read the book. I'm just rampantly speculating.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, and like a lot of these kinds of films that we're talking about, like using these kind of genre things to, you know, explore some of the worst people in society.
Right.
And I think that's like a really interesting jumping off point to get to these kinds of people and get to like what makes them tick to a little bit. But in this movie, then just kind of taking it even further off the deep end, because that's what Brandon Cronenberg seems to be interested in.
Yes. Seems to be the case. Indeed.
So what do you got for your next piece?
Well, I think this is kind of continuing with my theme from Eyes Wide Shut. And so this is a movie I haven't seen in a long time, but I think this fits in here. And it's Neil LaBute's The Shape of Things with Paul Rudd and Rachel Weisz. And another movie where this sort of outcast character, but not, you know, again, not of true outcast, but like, you know, someone who's gotten to the point of attending a prestigious college, but is still not in the 1% of the 1% or whatever, because of course there's even more pretentious people there. There's even richer people or whatever. So he's a bit awkward and seems to have gotten the attention of someone very cool and sophisticated and smart. And this is, you know, Rachel Weisz's character who seems to want to date him and takes him under her wing and kind of remolds his personality. And I'm going to spoil this whole movie because it is a big twist thing. But I mean, the twist is kind of what's the key there. And what's key here as well is that this guy who thinks he has been accepted by this sort of elite group has been revealed that the entire time, no, they're just mocking him, that he himself has been like this art project that she's been working on for the whole year or semester or whatever it is. And when she displays her art, it's him, and the way that she has like molded his entire personality to the way she wanted and how easily he was manipulated. So, I mean,
that was a big thing in the 2000s, huh? People were mean.
Yeah, well, that's all these early Neil. I mean, there's a lot of ways to criticize early Neil LaBute, but they were very, he was very, very bold about just being incredibly misanthropic and mean. Mm-hmm. And he's, I think, lost some of that in his later films. But I remember loving that movie in part just because it was just so like, these people are awful, you know?
Yeah.
And unapologetic for sure. About that.
Yeah, I don't remember if I've actually seen that. I remember the movie, but I might have seen it back when it first came out. But yeah, those kinds of movies where people think that they're in and then they're not.
Right.
Yeah, that definitely fits there.
Yes.
I will go with Midsommar. Might as well throw it in here. I mean, Brandon Cronenberg is kind of playing in a different world of horror than what you usually associate with, like, kind of the A24 horror thing or whatever. But, you know, you're still using a lot of that kind of heavily stylized stuff and the trippy visuals and all that and the masks and this, like, world where you really can't be sure of anything that's going on in it. And I felt like another thing about it is like the way that Midsommar tapped into like that fear of travel to like weird foreign places. And I think both of these movies really, that's again, like some of the things about going beyond the walls of this resort and like just knowing how dangerous it would be and like finding out about like all the rules and the fact that basically everything is punishable by death. And like, it really plays into that fear of like, being a stupid foreigner who goes to a place and then gets in trouble for like being
right,
an idiot.
Right. Yeah. You could imagine that the Midsommar village somehow existing in this fictional country somewhere or whatever,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
But it's interesting though. It, like, I guess maybe in contrast to Midsommar, because the ultimate result there is that our protagonist is sort of embraced by the natives. And in this movie, we never really, other than the one inspector who seems like he's just sort of exasperated with them, like, oh, these people again, they keep wanting to kill their clones, what the hell. But there's not really any repercussions related to that. We never really get to know or understand that the local culture or anything like that. And I imagine that's at least partially the point, because it's like these characters don't give a shit. As far as they're concerned,
they
these aren't even human beings who live here, you know.
Yeah. They don't need to care,
right?
So,
right,
you know, yeah. Oh, man. What do you have for your next piece?
Well, I'm going to go with I'm going to spoil another movie that has a giant twist. I guess that's kind of what we're doing here related to clones being murdered. And this is not even necessarily the like main thrust of this movie, but it's what I always remember. And that's Christopher Nolan's The Prestige. And which is a great movie. And I haven't seen in a long time. And there's a lot of twists related to stage magic and all this stuff, and doubles, not only the clones that get murdered, but characters who are twins and like all this sort of like, who is the real person and who is the double and all that kind of stuff, which they play with a little bit here. I mean, the one character brings up the idea of like, oh, I wasn't sure. Am I really me or am I my clone? And then they kind of just laugh it off. But that's in the background a little bit, at least. But, you know, the idea and the prestige, the eventual reveal that the way that Hugh Jackman's character is pulling off this trick that seems impossible is that he's just literally cloning himself every time and then killing his own clone and doing it just for the sake of being a cool magician. And I mean, I think that's kind of here what they're doing too. Like they're killing sentient beings, versions of themselves, just cause it's fun.
Yeah, sure. And they seem to really enjoy doing
it.
And they come back every year to do it again, apparently.
Right.
But yeah, I haven't seen The Prestige since it first came out, but I mean, yeah, it's great. And like, the idea of like, I don't think that's one of those twists that like, I don't think anybody saw coming at all,
right?
Because it doesn't even make sense like for that to be the twist, but then that's where it ends up going. And I think that's why it sticks out as like one of the better movies in like a Christopher Nolan's, you know, his filmography, because it's so daring and interesting and weird.
Yeah. I mean, I too haven't seen it in a long time, but I loved it at the time, and I'm sort of mixed on Nolan as a whole. So hopefully it would stand up.
Yeah, I would hope so. I'll go with another recent movie that might be a little too new, but we'll throw it on my list anyway. I'm going to go with Palm Springs, a movie that came out right around the same time as Possessor, I believe. But right in the middle of the pandemic, and it was like this comedy that kind of took everybody by storm a little bit, with Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti stuck in a time loop at this beautiful vacation resort. And it kind of plays with the question of like, well, why would you want that to end? Because it's this beautiful resort. Why wouldn't you want to just be there all the time? But of course, without any kind of, you know, stakes to anything, any kind of reason to live your life in any kind of good way, you know, you lose a big part of yourself and things go bad. And that's kind of, it's almost like the darkest possible version of that very cheerful and light movie. So it's similar in that same way of people like losing themselves because of not having any consequences anymore.
Right. And it's weird too, because I mean, in time loop movies in general, it's always the idea that there are no stakes, right? You can die, it doesn't matter. You can do terrible things and it all resets the next day. And I think we get that like at the end here, where they're leaving the resort finally, and these people start talking about their boring, you know, logistical things about their maids and, you know, phone calls they have to return. But for a while, at least, it seems like there are really big stakes here, right? I mean, and I think that's part of what's interesting is that Alexander Skarsgård gets caught up in the idea that like, this is incredibly scary and like horrible things are happening or could be happening. And everyone else is just seeing it as like fun, consequence-free romp or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I mean, that goes to the fact that they are the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. I mean, they're so rich that like nothing matters to them whatsoever. And so Skarsgård is a stranger in their world. And so for him, there's still stakes, but for them, no, they don't give two shits.
Right.
So, yeah. What do you have for your next piece?
So I'm going to go with one. I'm going to give some credit here to my Awesome Movie Year co-host, Jason Harris, who suggested this, even though he's not actually seen these movies, but I have. So I feel like I can include it. And that is the Purge films.
Okay.
Which are, on the one hand, as I was trying to tell him, I was like, well, I don't know, because it's the idea that there's like no consequences for anyone, right? Crime is legal for everyone. But especially in the later Purge films, I feel like the idea that even in those circumstances, the wealthy have a separate set of rules, and they have the resources where they can go around and hunt people down for sport and murder them because they have like big cars and lots of guns and whatever else you might need to commit lots of murders and stay safe yourself. And so I think that dynamic plays out across the series. I don't think it's all that really effective necessarily. It's either extremely blunt or kind of like muddled. And I don't really like these movies all that much, but I think they're really like in a much more like basic horror action thriller kind of way, trying to hammer home that same point that no matter what, the wealthy, the 1% are going to find their own ways to have like separate standards for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, those movies just never really appealed to me, but I think it definitely fits. And it would be the easiest thing to try to get people into the theater to watch something weird like Infinity Pool is be like, you know, it's kind of like The Purge. Like, I think that that would be a good comparison that would like drive people into a movie like this. But then, you know, whether or not they'd be okay with it getting as weird as it does, you know, maybe not so much. But yeah, I think it definitely fits though as a piece. So yeah, good one, Jason yeah. Harris. Yeah.
Thank you, Jason. Yes.
I'll go with a piece that might be a little out of left field. I don't know for sure if this one will work, but to me it works. And that's Paul Thomas Anderson's Punch Drunk Love. Because I was thinking about how Adam Sandler is just this guy, this kind of schmuck, and he's just kind of sitting around feeling sorry for himself. And one day he's thinking, all these other people get away with this, you know, the phone sex thing. Like, why can't I? You know, why can't I get away with this little thing? And then, of course, it goes horribly wrong, and he has to deal with all of the repercussions of making this phone call. And it kind of reminded me of this very schmucky performance from Alexander Skarsgård, who is very playing against, you know, certainly what he looks like, but against a lot of his types, although he's kind of all over the place with his roles. But still, you know, this guy, he's like, you know, why not go spend some time with this supposed fan of mine? Why not go outside of the walls? Why not end up in these sex orgies? Why not doing drugs? You know, it like, why not like continuing to like continue down this spiral and everything just goes completely wrong. And so it reminded me of that whole thing of what poor Adam Sandler creates for himself in Punch Drunk Love.
All right. I you know, I haven't seen that movie in so long that all the things you're describing happening in it, I didn't even remember. So
don't even remember. Yeah.
I cannot comment. If you ask me what is the plot of Punch Drunk Love, I would not be able to tell you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is kind of all over the place, but
yeah.
So there's a lot of things that happen in that
right.
movie.
And I remember, I mean, I remember not liking it because I tend not to care for Sandler even in dramatic roles. And I think like Nolan, I'm mixed on PTA. So the movies of his I like a lot, but a lot of his movies just don't do anything for me. And that was one of them. But clearly I have no good memories of it. So
yeah,
check it out again, enough. Maybe.
What do you got for your next piece?
So speaking of Mia Goth in this film, I thought of Suspiria, the remake, which Mia Goth appears in. And you could go with the original Suspiria as well.
Sure.
Throw both of these in. There's definitely some giallo influence going on here, especially with the colors and the
sure.
the gels, the filters that Jason, my co-host Jason Harris, seems to be not a fan of or feels like are you.
And he's not alone. A lot of people have been pointing those out as being like obvious, I guess, or whatever. But, you know.
Right. And I mean, I think that's something that giallos do. And also the sort of unreality of like, what is the plot and what is happening kind of thing as it goes further along, something that seems at first to be sort of a straightforward, almost like mystery story turns into this like surreal phantasmagorical thing. And especially I think in the remake of Suspiria, which it gets much more crazy out there, but you know, again, these are characters who seem sort of naive at first and that are drawn into this elite world. In that case, it's like the ballet academy and where they are also witches. And you have the character, Dakota Johnson's character in the remake film, who seems kind of innocent and nice at first, but once she's offered the opportunity to get into this world of sinister witches, she's all for it. And I think that's what we have with Alexander Skarsgård in this film. And the other thing that might or might not connect to, not the remake, but to old giallo films, and I don't know if this was just my screener or my perception of it, but to me it seemed like some of the blood in this film looked like unnaturally bright red. Like,
it was also very watery.
Yeah.
It was definitely interesting the way they did the blood.
I don't know if that was influenced particularly by giallo films, or I mean just generally films in like the 70s use a different kind of fake blood. And you can read like all like investigations into this, and you watch a lot of movies from that era, especially low budget movies, and the blood just looks like red paint. And I wonder if he was going for some level of like, you're meant to wonder how real this looks or is supposed to be. So that might be a stretch for me there.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe not, but overall, though, Suspiria is a great piece, though, and I really like that about the Dakota Johnson character, like, just like once she's in, like, hell yeah, right. I'm into all this. So yeah, that's a great one there. I like that a lot. I'll go for my next piece. I'm going to go Fight Club for my next piece. Basically, you know, and this is maybe reading Mia Goth and her little crew of people in a more positive light, which I don't know that I necessarily believe.
Yeah,
but
I'm not sure I'm with maybe, you on that.
Yeah, I don't necessarily believe that, but just looking at it in that way, it's almost like they're trying to get Skarsgård to rock bottom so he can build himself back up and like live his fullest possible potential. And so it's a little bit of Project Mayhem with all the disaster shit that they're doing on that island, but and just killing people and causing destruction, and a little bit of just building him back up from ground zero. So a little bit of Fight Club maybe.
Yeah, all right. But you know, Tyler Durden is the villain of Fight Club also, right?
Yes, of course. I know that. Yeah.
A lot of people don't think that, but they are wrong. Yeah,
those people would be very wrong.
Yes. So. Yeah. I would be terrified to meet people who genuinely think that like Mia Goth is the hero of this movie and that she's admirable or something.
Well, I'm sure somebody out there thinks
I'm
that,
sure you're so. Right. Yes.
So I guess that's a piece for them. Exactly. But what do you got for your next piece?
Well, I guess, I mean, I might as well use this, and this is kind of an obvious one, but it's Eli Roth's Hostel and, you know, Hostel Part 2.
I've actually never seen those movies, but I know stupid Americans do stupid things.
Yeah, yeah, they do. And I haven't seen them in a while, and they're not necessarily good or even great. Sadly, the most recent one I've seen is Hostel Part 3, which Eli Roth has nothing to do with and is set here in Las Vegas, which is why I watched it. And it's just a really, even though almost none of it was shot here. And
is there even a hostel in Las Vegas? I don't know.
There are hostels. There's one on Las Vegas there Boulevard, is? Definitely. So,
okay,
yeah. Cool. But no, don't see Hostel Part 3. And furthermore, in Hostel Part 3, I think it really loses the whole concept. But I mean, the idea in that movie, if I remember correctly, is sort of an inverse in a way of this, because it is the ultra wealthy sort of torturing people for fun. But the ultra wealthy are the like Eastern Europeans, and the people being tortured are the stupid Americans. So they're not necessarily rich. I don't think they're just idiots on vacation and they get caught up in this world. But it is the idea of going to some foreign place. And like you were saying, whether it's in Midsommar or in this movie, where if you deviate from the path that your like tour guide has told you to go on, you could end up in some sort of horrifying scenario that don't understand because you're not familiar with the local culture or you don't speak the language or whatever. And probably you're not going to get tortured or cloned or whatever, but that there's a feeling there that it could happen. So, you know, I think this is a Hostel is the very like sort of unsophisticated take on something like this.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because, like I said, I haven't seen them, but I certainly had thought about it as a possibility here. And I feel like it's one that like had to be, you know, an actual on the mind of writing this story, you know.
Right.
So, so good piece there to include for sure. You know, another obvious one that this comparison has been made 100 times. We kind of hinted at it in the beginning, but the White Lotus TV show, again, like rich people going to like a beautiful vacation and just losing themselves, like just totally, you know, losing anything that makes them good people in the process. And this could have been like the most, you know, fucked up season of the White Lotus that Mike White would ever make. So and this show is great, and this has been like a big thing lately with you know, rich people doing terrible things on beautiful vacation spots. Like, it's happening a lot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's, I don't know. I kind of left out any of those. I haven't watched the White Lotus, so I can't, you know, I felt like I couldn't bring that up, but I've seen some of the other stuff related to that recently, and I just kind of left it all out of my list. But certainly it is it's a trend going on right now. And I think this movie does a little more, even though its commentary about the wealthy isn't necessarily more substantial or sophisticated than some of those other movies. I feel like it has more to offer just with the sci-fi horror concept rather than just a straightforward, like, here are rich people and don't they suck kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but I should probably watch The White Lotus someday.
And I think that it's also entirely possible to watch this movie, and even though it's a trend right now and it's on people's minds, and not even notice that, like to not even think about that, like to just see it as this ultra violent sci-fi movie about people who get clones and kill the clones, like that's it. And you could watch it either way. So,
right. Yeah. Right. That is true. I will say, I did enjoy the Black Lotus sketch on Saturday Night Live. So
I didn't see
that's
that.
That's all is I that have to contribute there.
Okay. I'll have to watch that later. Right on. What do you have next?
So what do I have next? Oh, this is a movie that I really like this movie. It's a movie I think that not a lot of people saw from a filmmaker who, well, I really liked for a little while. Anyway, it's called Piercing, from Nicholas Pesci, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but he made a couple movies. The Eyes of My Mother was his first film, and then this movie, Piercing, and that I just think are really amazingly bold, stylistic horror films. And then he made a crappy remake of The Grudge, so hopefully he'll do something good next. But anyway, Piercing is the movie that I'm talking about here. And this gets into this sort of, going back to Crash maybe, the like sex fetish of violence. You know, the idea in Piercing is the main character, played by Christopher Abbott, basically is like a serial killer in waiting. You know, he has these serial killer desires. And in order to prevent himself from killing like his wife and child as he feels those urges, he decides he's going to hire a prostitute in a hotel and kill this prostitute. But the prostitute that he hired doesn't show up. And the replacement prostitute is just as hot for violence as he is, played nice. Just so well. Mia Wasikowska is so, so good in this movie. And it's just this weird dance between the two of them where they're not saying anything, but the whole time they're both implying like, let's have sex and also murder each other. Like, and they're just kind of dancing around it the whole time. It's just a beautiful, like the colors are just like eye popping. It's one of these movies where the sets and stuff look very deliberately artificial. And I don't know. I just think it's a really, really effective. It's very funny, like darkly funny. And I think, I don't know if it's on Netflix now. It was for a long time, but if it isn't, you should watch it wherever it is. Listeners of Piecing It Together, because it's a great movie and it does connect to Infinity Pool too.
Yeah, I think it definitely makes sense. I haven't seen it. I think I remember you mentioning it on like one of our top 10 episodes. Like,
I think it was my like number two movie of the year, whatever year it came out.
Okay, now I'm finally going to get around to it, because that really did sound great back then. It sounds great now. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to watch that. It sounds awesome. I'll go with my final puzzle piece here, and another out there puzzle piece, but I'm going with Wet Hot American Summer. And my reason is because of the classic going into town montage segment when the counselors decide to get away from camp for a minute and go into town to go buy a few things. And it turns into this debaucherous orgy of drugs and sex and alcohol and rock and roll and violence and criminal activity. And then at the end, they just go back to camp like nothing ever happened. And that's basically the ending of Infinity Pool in a nutshell. So
yeah, I feel like in a weird way, with some slight adjustments, this could have been like a David Wayne directed like weirdo comedy, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah,
about that?
I mean, it's definitely a weird enough premise for sure. Like, it can go in any direction, so I could totally see that.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any other puzzle pieces?
Well, I was holding this one because I thought you would bring it up because it's one of your favorite movies, but maybe I'm wrong about it. But it's Climax, the Gaspar Noé film.
I do love Climax. I'm glad you brought it up.
And
go for it.
And I hate it, but I think the sort of psychedelic, the Climax is like if the psychedelic orgy scenes in this movie were just the whole movie. And I find it so incredibly annoying and tedious and whatever. But I definitely think that sort of psychedelic, you know, they take drugs and they're having sex. And the sex, which is like almost, like, it's not just primal or whatever, it's like scary sex, you know, right? Mm-hmm. They're not just having sex because it's fun and enjoyable. They're like, you know, sort of throwing themselves violently into these sexual acts without even being able to control themselves or whatever, and not really entirely knowing what's going on or whatever. So also a very, very sexually explicit film. And I will say, I think you and I saw different cuts of this film, of Infinity Pool.
Okay.
Because you went to see it in the theater.
NC-17? I saw it in the theater, yeah.
Right, and I saw a press screener, which was the NC-17 cut. So there are, I'm not sure exactly what all was cut, but I know there's some sexual, very explicit sexual things that were cut from the R-rated version.
Well, definitely Alexander Skarsgård's penis, I believe. So,
yes, there is a close-up of his penis ejaculating in this in the NC-17 cut. That's not.
Wow. Well, hopefully that NC-17 unrated cut hits the store soon.
Yeah, you gotta rewatch it for that, right?
Absolutely. But Climax, great piece to include. I'm happy you did, and I would maybe even throw Enter the Void in there as well, because I mean, a lot of that just Gaspar Noé, like, just really throwing everything at the screen all at the same time and, disorienting you in all kinds of ways. And that's something that Cronenberg seems to be like, as much as he can be compared to his father in a lot of ways with a lot of the stuff that he does, I think that's kind of his thing, is it's just making these very weird, abrasive visuals that are used in the process of exploring some really interesting sci-fi ideas. I mean, I think that's kind of all three of his movies.
Yes. Yeah. I think, but not as abrasive. I mean, I've only seen Climax, and I had such a strong negative response that I've not made an effort to see more Gaspar Noé films. But my impression is that Cronenberg is not nearly as abrasive deliberately as Noé is.
Yeah, nobody is. But well, do you have any other pieces? Or is that?
I mean, I have a bunch more clone movies I could name if you want to go through those, or
you want to speed round a few clone movies?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of comedy, there is Multiplicity, the Michael Keaton movie where he clones himself and exploits his clones to do stuff for him. So
there you go.
It's got some thematic connections there.
Why not?
I also thought of the Michael Bay film, The Island, where Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor are clones who have been raised in this environment, because you wonder, you never really see the perspective of the clones in this movie. Yeah. And I wondered a couple of times when it cuts to like Alexander Skarsgård waking up. And actually, I take it back, because there is a moment where you do see that, where it fakes out and you see all the characters like in the prison cell, and they're like, oh, we're just gonna, you're gonna face consequences this time and you're gonna get murdered. And for a second you think, oh shit, they really got murdered. But then we switch back.
They straight up trick the audience. Like, that was a real funny moment for sure.
Right.
Like,
yeah, it
was disgusting but funny. Yeah.
And so, that movie is all from the perspective of the clones and like, what do they experience and what they've been told or whatever. And of course, it turns out much better for the clones in that movie, because it's a big Michael Bay action movie and they escape and they fight people and whatever. And that doesn't happen here.
The island has a lot of moral implications on its mind, just like.
Michael Bay, definitely one of the top filmmakers for exploring moral dilemmas of our time.
Yes. Of course.
Definitely. With lots of product placement. That was the other thing I remember mainly about that movie, is the insane amount of product placement in this like secret clone facility.
Ridiculous. I love him.
And lastly, actually, the movie that has like essentially the exact same premise, which is done so much better, which is Never Let Me Go by Mark Romanek, which is also about clones who've been grown for the express purpose of having their organs harvested by the ultra rich.
And yeah, sure.
The lives that they live, and they do not get to escape in a giant Michael Bay action sequence, but instead are just very sad.
Yes.
But that's a great movie. That's like, I'm joking about it, but that's a really good movie. So those are the clone movies I thought of.
Those are all very good clone movies. So I'm very glad you brought them all up. So I'll read down our finished puzzle list and we'll get into some closing thoughts here. We talked about Crash, Duel, Eyes Wide Shut, A Clockwork Orange, The Shape of Things, Midsommar, The Prestige, Palm Springs, The Purge, Punch Drunk Love, Suspiria, Fight Club, Hostel, The White Lotus, Piercing, Wet Hot American Summer, Climax, Multiplicity, The Island, and Never Let Me Go. Lots of weird shit all smashed together into a very interesting movie. Any closing thoughts, anything that we didn't quite get to while we were talking puzzle pieces here?
I mean, I think I've really exhausted my my thoughts here, but we also talked a bit about this on our awesome movie year episode about Antiviral. Check that out. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed this film. I think not as much as you did, but I thought it was really fun and weird and interesting, and I'm still intrigued. I feel like Brandon Cronenberg is still maybe not quite at the like final level of what he could do. Like, right. This film is not quite there for me necessarily, but I feel like he's really building up great momentum, and I'm really interested to see where he goes from here.
I think it's an interesting place because he's clearly an idea guy. Like, I think that that's part of what I like so much about this movie is that it's an idea like stretched as far as it could possibly go on, you know, this kind of budget and this kind of, you know, movie making, really. I mean, these kind of movies, even though this is in fairly wide release right now at the time of recording, which is insane for a movie like this. These kind of movies just don't really like get out there in that way. So I think he's kind of hampered a little bit by what he can do. And I do think that we're going to see even better stuff if these movies can, you know, get seen. And like I said, I mean, I'm 3 for 3 with them. I really like all three of these movies.
Yeah, I like them too. I think Possessor was my favorite, but I do think they're all really good. And I hope that he doesn't, you know, take a job directing a Marvel movie or something like that. Yeah. That he's got the family money. One hopes that David Cronenberg has saved some pennies or whatever that he can pass along, and so Brandon doesn't need to do the Grudge remake or whatever like Nicolas Pesch did. And we'll see where things go for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that does it for Infinity Pool. Josh, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Yes, a movie that is incredibly different from Infinity Pool. That is a very small-scale, naturalistic, mumblecore coming-of-age comedy that I just absolutely loved. It's on Mubi right now. It's called Actual People. It is the debut feature from Kit Zohar, who is the writer and director and star of it, and made it for like $10,000 while she was a college student in New York City. And it is it's a coming-of-age story. Even at age 43, I still have this strong identification with these movies about people graduating from college and trying to figure out what to do with their lives. And so that's what it is. She plays this character who's in her final weeks of college, and she sees her friends are making plans for jobs or grad school, and she doesn't know what to do with herself, and she's just broken up with her long-term boyfriend. And it's funny and it's insightful about that period of life and also about that particular generation. And it's very much in the vein of like Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach stuff, like Frances Ha, or going back to like Kicking and Screaming from Noah Baumbach, or Lena Dunham's work, things like that. So if you're into that stuff and mumblecore, if it weren't for, I had written about this recently in my VOD column, and then I discovered that it had opened in like one theater in New York City for 1 week at the end of 2022. And if it weren't for that, this would be a total candidate for my number one movie of 2023 already. So,
hey, I made Francis Ferguson my number one movie of 2020. So you can do whatever the hell you want at this point.
We'll see where it ends up at the end of the year. But either way, it's really great. And if you have Mubi, I think it's there exclusively, but definitely watch it. It's called Actual People.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm gonna have to check it out. Maybe I'll make it my number one. We'll see what happens.
But, who knows?
Josh, tell us what's going on Awesome Movie Year.
Well, like I said, we've had a discussion of Brandon Cronenberg on Awesome Movie Year. That episode is about to come out. I don't know. You told me the schedule and then I forgot already. But
yeah, it'll be next week, actually.
All right, next week.
Kind of perfect. Yeah.
Look for that.
Lots of Cronenberg. Yeah.
It's part of our recently launched season on the films of 2012. We had finished up 1953. So we are traveling lightning speed forward in time to 2012. And that's the great thing about Awesome Movie Year, the range of time periods that we talk about in film history. So listen to our antiviral episode for some more thoughts on Infinity Pool too.
Awesome. And where can people find that?
Oh yeah, maybe try to find it at awesomemovieyear.com, at Awesome Movie Year on Facebook and Instagram, Awesome Movie Pod on Twitter, and wherever you listen to podcasts, just get it wherever you listen to this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. It'll pop up. And it's in the show notes. So yeah.
There you go.
Yes. Well, Josh, as always, great having you here, and I look forward to next time.
Can't wait. I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years, and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics. Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Infinity Pool. If you enjoyed that one, make sure to go back and check out Possessor. Like I said, Josh joined me on that one a couple years ago. Great episode. So go listen to that. And like we mentioned, next week over on Awesome Movie Year, we actually have a conversation for... We just started the year of 2012, and we always do a film from a notable first-time filmmaker in that particular year that we're covering. And it just so happens, Brandon Cronenberg's Antiviral came out that year. So next week on Awesome Movie Year, you'll want to check out that Antiviral conversation. It's a really fun one. So for a really weird movie. But yeah, check that out as well. Of course, make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like what we do here on the show, drop a 5-star rating. We would appreciate that. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget about our Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff over there. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Check it out if you want to support the show. Don't forget about our live show coming up. There is a link in the show notes with more information about the show. And it's going to be February 23rd. I hope to see all of you there. And let's close this out with a piece of music like we always do. And at first I was thinking my song from my most recent album, More Content, Antiviral, is obviously, you know, the obvious choice here for a Brandon Cronenberg movie. But actually I was thinking, I haven't played anything in a while from the soundtrack album, The Dissection Table, that I put out in 2021. And this is a film which, like I said back when I first put the soundtrack out, this is a film you may never get to see, I don't know. But the themes of the movie, though, definitely deal with a guy who is just completely losing himself to violence and all of his worst tendencies. And so I thought this would fit in well as far as thematically with Infinity Pool. So let's go with a track from the Dissection Table soundtrack. I think I'll go with the title track, The Dissection Table. So we'll play that. And I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.